folks, Richard Tubb here with a very special bonus-ode of Tub Talk, the podcast for IT consultants. We are at Channel Live, a big ICT event in Birmingham in the UK, my hometown, my original stomping grounds when I ran my MSP business back here. And so it's really good to catch up with old friends, new friends. And I'm joined today by somebody who has become a good friend over the past few years and has got a really interesting story, Thomas Welton. Tom. So Tom is, you're a solutions engineer, I guess, or are you?
Currently, at the moment, yeah.
That's the current title, Pax 8. And the reason I say you've got a very interesting story, Tom, is obviously Pax 8 here are at the events. We see each other at a number of different events around the world, around the country. You are, as eagle-eared listeners would be able to tell, not a Brit.
Not quite. My accent betrayed me a bit there. I usually go with the joke, it's a Sheffield accent, but then I instantly get called out on that when I...
So tell us, because you moved over in the very early days of Pax 8 establishing themselves in the UK and Europe, and you were at the forefront. You helped head up that movement. So tell us a little bit more about your story.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just one of those incredible moments and opportunities that when that opportunity presents itself, you say yes to it. So going back in time, it was March of 2021, I think, is when the pandemic officially hit and, offices are evacuated. Everybody goes home. We close down. Previously, I'd worked at the Pax 8 in the Denver, Colorado office back in the United States. We also, switched our whole business to remote in 48 hours. I remember being very proud of that, being a company of around 500 individuals. Spent a few months locked down and things like that. And around midsummer, a couple gentlemen came down as we kind of had our offices maybe lightly opened and things like that with social distancing that Cole Knuth and Wyatt Clay, two legends at Pax 8, also Americans as well, had some discussions with John Street, our CEO and founder, and said, hey, we don't really know what's going on with this pandemic situation, but I think that we need to expand. I think that what we're doing is really great here in the United States, and I think that we have that opportunity for success across the pond, as it were. And so including those two individuals, myself, and then another individual, Anthony Tinetti, on our support team, we're kind of the first of the four Americans. And so the tip of the spear, and as cliched as it sounds from kind of like a Hollywood film, it was a one-way flight. We literally booked a one-way flight, had to get special permission from the government to come in and things like that, as we were able to, service, critical industries and things like that. We do take care of MSPs, which do take care of, NHS clients and critical services and things like that. So we very much... we're part of that infrastructure and getting the licensing up and running, getting those businesses supported. The whole world had to work remote independently. And so we saw things like Microsoft Teams go from maybe a nice to have conversation to a need to have conversation. And we saw Zoom and Teams, do a side by side of feature releases to get that out there. And upon landing, we were greeted with a 14-day lockdown and quarantine in the flat. right smack in the middle of a tier three. And so even going outside was, more or less frowned upon, unless it was just for a quick walk coming back. But without droning on too much about that, we eventually, were able to, come out of the lockdowns as the UK government, looked at things and said, hey, we want to start, letting people back into the offices and what that's going to look like. We partnered with a rental company in Bristol known as Runway East, and we're able to do one of those kind of sizing up situations, as it were. We had a little trivia night the other night, and we're currently on our fourth office in Bristol.
Wow.
Going on nearly 4 years, here in the UK, and then greater EMEA as well. And I think I've probably lost count of our brick and mortars across the business here, as we've got a couple here in the UK, Bristol, Farnborough, Derby. Plenty on the mainland, as it were, in the Baltics, the Nordics, DACH in the German region, as well as Zwolle, Netherlands, being maybe one of our other primary offices. But it's been an incredible experience. I think, realistically, we didn't know what we were signing ourselves up for. It was, more or less meant to be, give us 6 months minimum, come out, maybe get that skeleton crew in place, train somebody to do what you do, and, you can head back to the United States if you wish. Happy to report that all four of us stayed for several years. We'll do a little bit of bragging and saying I'm the last of the Americans here. So I am, currently the longest deployed American international, to put very specific terms on that. But has been an experience. And I'll maybe just follow up and say that Bristol is home. You know, everybody knows the various cities. They've all got their own, you know, culture and life. Went out in Birmingham last night, got to explore this beautiful city. The churches and the green grass and everything were just amazing here. But Bristol really struck a chord with me, which is kind of the music scene and the food. As an international person, I actually don't like traveling as much, or at least some of the headaches associated. So having that international airport in Bristol, as opposed to maybe having to go all the way to London Heathrow to fly out if we're just, you know, going into the Netherlands or heading over to Dublin or something like that to see some of our clients has been, a good place to call home. So here I am.
And I mean, you're a young man. So what was it like to uproot your life in America and take the plunge, go on this adventure to the UK? I mean, as you say, like, I speak to partners who speak so highly of you all the time. You're sort of internet famous. People know you from videos and things like that. At events, I see people coming up and like they recognize you and to say hello to you and things. So you've made a life here. But what did it feel like when that opportunity came up and you thought, you know, were there any fears that, oh, I'm going to uproot my life and go to the other sides of the world?
Absolutely. There's definitely fears involved with it. I do, yeah. I'm joking around about this with a few of the other Americans that are here, and I was easily transplantable. So, yeah, you know, fortunate or unfortunate enough to not have a significant other at the time. I was still renting and hadn't purchased a house or anything like that. So it really just required me kind of wrapping up my current lease, throwing a few boxes of my, you know, keepsakes in my parents' basement. So, you know, shout out to them for accepting that. And then just selling my car was all it took, and quite literally a backpack and one travel suitcase on an airplane, and kind of launching into that one-way trip is something that a lot of people maybe never get that opportunity, and you know, they romanticize certain things about it as well, where it sounds great, but kind of pushing out in that one way, and I really think that transition into what I do today and for work, and essentially restarting the startup culture again, where there is, you know, less than double digits of, you know, Pax8 employees on the international scale. You know, that's why I said currently a solution engineer. I've worn, you know, many, many hats on that, and the ability to, you know, look at our vendors and our line card. And yeah, for the first, you know, couple of months to a year, when, you know, we would add certain things, get those agreements in place to be able to sell locally here to the UK and the rest of Europe. I would just have to learn a new product, dive right into it, figure it out, break it, talk to their engineers, get some feedback on it. That really kind of drove a passion for security on my end, talk about some of my credentials that did help with that imposter syndrome that I think people do get. That's what I'm not from a technology background originally. I did come from hotels and hospitality.
I never knew that. Wow.
A little bit of customer service. I was up in Breckenridge, Colorado, because I liked snowboarding. I wanted to be a ski bum, and the best place to do that is live in the resort itself. And so I worked in hotels for a bit. Wanted to do technology. I thought that meant coding and scripting and Python, and very quickly got overwhelmed with that. But yeah, fortunate enough to find Pax8 in kind of their early days as a provisioning specialist. So really just putting that license in place, solving maybe some of the issues when things get tangled up in the API, as I like to diplomatically say about, you know, certain issues. And then really the imposter syndrome wasn't just Pax8, you know, telling me, hey, you're doing a great job, you're, you know, doing this and we think you're good. Getting that third party certification, I think, was really important to me in breaking that imposter syndrome. And so I chased down a lot of Microsoft certifications very heavily. I am a Microsoft Enterprise Admin expert. And so that requires a whole, you know, kind of, yeah, a bunch of different tests you have to take to go
do
that.
Yeah, it's quite a heavy lift, actually.
Heavy lift to get into that. Got a power platform in that one as well. And then the one that really kind of kicked my butt a little bit was the CompTIA Security Plus.
Yeah.
That was the gut check. That was the proof that I needed. You know, you're always nervous when you're taking these tests. It's COVID, so it's digitally proctored, where if you, you know, have a coffee cup or something written on the whiteboard, they'll fail you, and you're nervous enough while taking the test. But when you're able to click submit and then kind of get that instant feedback of congratulations, you've passed the test, you know, something I studied for 3 or 4 months relentlessly, and memorizing port numbers and things like that, quite literally 40 different random ports and things, you know, of course we can look up on a whim, but learning that security kind of baseline in a very vendor agnostic way. So yeah, shout out to CompTIA for offering those vendor agnostic technology type certifications. That gave me all the confidence I've needed, and I love the field events. We're out here today. Yeah, we saw each other a week or two ago, and yeah, London at the Excel event, and This is the channel. You know, my day-to-day might be behind a computer with a virtual event or something, but this is where the channel lives. These are real human beings that, yeah, we, you know, sometimes maybe get into a little bit of a, kind of a routine or a rhythm on those day-to-day calls. Yeah. This breaks me out of my comfort zone in a very good way, because I get to speak to people that maybe not are perfectly in line with our business model and the way that we transact. So I get to educate them on what we do and where we can fit in. And they tell me, you know, their story and their uniqueness and where they were 6 months ago and where they want to be in 6 months. And sometimes that, you know, turns into a partnership with Pax8. So here I really get to kind of, you know, flex that critical thinking model when speaking to our partners. And ultimately just proving to them that what we do at Pax8 is generally good. And I believe it. And that's why I love this company. And can't believe it's already been 6 years, I guess, to really summarize it. Coming up on 6 years, flew by very, very quickly.
I was writing an article the other day for a website called MSPX, mm-hmm. and they asked me to say, well, you know, I work with a lot of vendors as an advisor, as a consultant, who vendors who perhaps come from North America into the UK, into Europe and things. And so I wrote this article that said, like, here are the common mistakes that vendors make, you know, but one of the pieces of advice I gave was, like, Brits want to speak to Brits as a rule of thumb. However, they're totally okay, like, if you fly your best people in as like an advanced guard sort of thing and go in. And genuinely, and I say this as a huge compliment to you, people don't see you as an American. Like I speak to, and I say that, I hope you take that as a compliment. I speak to partners and that, and when I mention your name, the faces light up and that. So you are, you know, you've built yourself into British culture. You totally get it. But I think it's clear to listeners as well how much of, I'm not going to say sacrifice, but how much effort you've put in to getting involved in the UK managed service provider scene, getting out to these events, meeting people, but also the work that goes on behind the scenes. So, I mean, congratulations, mate, on everything, because, you know, I think it's a remarkable story what you've done, and your reputation is speaking for itself within the industry. So long may it continue.
Oh, well.
So I've got to ask, what's next for you at Pax8? So at the moment, you're a solutions engineer, and we said at the moment. Sure. So most of your days, I'm right in thinking, are spent speaking to MSPs about how to deploy the right technology and helping them get that set up. Would that be right?
Correct, yeah. So, a quick breakdown is we have solution engineers and solution consultants. The solution consultants sit maybe a little bit between our account management and then the maybe more purist of the technology on the solution engineering end. That, you know, a lot of those individuals came from the solution engineering team. So yeah, very, you know, specific shout out to Daisy Pike and Darren McGuire here in the UK and Teo Wend out there in the Netherlands for you know, helping be founding members of that team. And they've been highly successful in looking at that larger picture. And so I kind of assist with really bespoke conversations where it may not fit into some of the day-to-day where that's, you know, I'm going to have three or four of these conversations and they're all going to follow more or less the same format. I'll be able to hop on with our account managers who I have, you know, great relationships with. I love our account management team. They're really good. We sit on the same floor and feed off each other's energy and things like that. And really just diving into those bespoke conversations where it's not quite, you know, that traditional, vendor, distributor, MSP to customer kind of straight line model that we sometimes like to simplify on the whiteboard. Again, it's fun for me to break out of the comfort zone. It keeps me interested in it. The future is here. And so I have, picked a particular technology, probably comes as no surprise to anybody listening to this, artificial intelligence. That's kind of interesting.
Let's talk AI for a minute then. So what is happening? And I don't want the headlines. I want the real world AI. What are MSPs using AI for? What are their clients looking to use AI for at the moment?
Sure. So we're seeing that in a number of things. But realistically, all of the MSPs themselves internally or all of their customers as a consumer are leveraging the AI. They're doing it through Snapchat or Instagram or ChatGPT or things like that. And so in the in the business sphere, we do have a couple of vendors that employ AI technology, maybe different than ChatGPT. As I've done a little bit of studying and ramping up certifications, I am currently looking at the AI 900 by Microsoft. It's about the Azure cognitive services that are in place. There's a difference between a predictive model or a chat bot or an object recognition so that it can identify this is two coffee cups and a cell phone on a table is what I'm looking at. The talk of the town and implementation is the early adoption of Microsoft's Copilot. So that's the OpenAI Microsoft-backed version of it, and there's a lot of demystification that goes on with that. And I won't claim to be a knowledge expert on this as well. We've got a fantastic Microsoft team with Nathan Stokes and Evan Phillips specifically at PAX 8 that can have a chat with anybody about kind of the more nuances of this program. But realistically, we need them to know that you're not training the AI when you're using Microsoft Copilot. Every time you're punching something into that OpenAI or the ChatGPT online, your responses are helping build that AI model. There's a lot of confidential things that happen with business. There's a lot of secret sauces and things that just need to be kept sensitive, let alone compliance and GDPR and cyber essentials related. Copilot's able to achieve that by scoping in the data, making sure that users are have role-based access control into what they can look up and what they can access. And it's a technology with the power to do a lot of damage if it's not properly deployed. So I don't want to be as grandiose in describing it like the invention of fire, but yeah, fire can be very destructive or it can be very helpful if it's used right. AI is the same way, and overwhelmingly, this is not a tulip craze, is a turn of phrase I like to use sometimes. And some people say that it'll just be a tulip craze, and we won't be talking about AI in a year and a half from now. I think you and I might sit down in a year from half from now and wonder at what we were on the cusp of, and not realize that we're living in that moment. Of course, hindsight being what it is, we'll look back and say, of course, that was always going to happen, but. Today, right now, next week, next month, the things that are going out, that are coming on the web, potentially misinformation and malicious actors having access to these tools as well has made certain threat actors more dangerous than they might be, to not go super drawn into it. But the script kiddie is a very common type of threat actor. It's the single individual. They're not smart enough to write their own code. They can just log onto the dark web, download a ransomware package. All they need is your email, and they can fire that off and have it do all the damage at once. Now with the power of an AI chatbot, they can ask it, how can I make my ransomware even better, even stickier? How can I maybe wait for that backup communication to disable that first and then go in so I can go for it? So love the dynamics of security and kind of this cyber arms race that we're currently in against the threat actors. And excited to be playing for the good guys on the blue team here, and that comes from educating myself and then ultimately educating our partners as well.
The effort, Tom, that you put into keeping up to date with cutting edge technologies is truly remarkable. I think we live in remarkable times generally. It's really exciting times. As you say, it's a double-edged sword, though. It can be used for ill or it can be used for good. Here on TubTalk, I released my very first synthesized episode recently, where I wrote the script and I didn't say a word of it. I gave it to a computer that had modeled on my AI, that had modeled on my voice. It cloned the voice and I released the whole episode. And we had such incredible feedback from people on that. But it wasn't a gimmick. The reason I did that is to say, hey, look, this is happening and it is happening right now. And so I have said to people about that episode where, Richard Tubman in quotes, air quotes, his voice was cloned and talking and that. Think about what could happen to your clients with cloned voices. Like if you got a voicemail left on your phone, hey, transfer that money, across or whatever it might be. So in the real world, we are seeing real, threats. What worries you about what's coming around the corner, or what are you actually seeing in the wild at the moment in terms of AI and how it is being used for ill?
It being adaptive and the polymorphic email, the email that's always changing, or the attack that's always changing. Yeah, AI is going to continue to be polymorphic, so it's going to be an arms race. It's going to be a win for a blue team and maybe a breakthrough in technology on our side and in defense, or maybe recognition of calling out, oh, this email is clearly written by an AI, or this image is clearly been generated by an AI, versus breakthroughs on the red team as well. We have to be prepared for the fact that we may lose a round or two of that. The world, unfortunately, doesn't have strong cybersecurity and a lot of things like infrastructure. And so, talked about me in the United States, and I know that's a huge fear of the United States government, is that we could potentially take a cyber terror attack on a massive scale by simply sidelining one of our power plants or our water treatment plants. And these systems are often, outdated. Government budgets are, slim enough, so we don't have enough money to maybe pay for some of the updates to security. We're going to have to be conscientious about that going forward. So it's just going to be a very, very interesting world. And I don't think that anybody is particularly ready for it. And that's what, I won't claim for myself to be the one to, help us out and survive it. But we have to just be cognizant. We have to be vigilant about what's going on. And then just react almost as fast as the AI and adopting the new technologies, configuring the new solutions, listening to frameworks, like, you know, Cyber Essentials and GDPR and, you know, the United States catching up in certain frameworks. And a lot of that regulation is legal and it takes humans months to sort it out in Congress or Parliament or, the European Union to get stuff to pass. But the AI is not going to wait for any of that. It is marching ahead regardless of that. So we just have to be aware of that reality and do the best that we can with it. You know, not to be grim or not to be negative about it. But it's potentially a daunting future that we're going into with this technology being out there in the wild.
Well, let's finish on a positive note. So we've talked about, you know, the things that are actually a little bit scary that you see out there, and you're at the cutting edge with this stuff, as you know, as listeners can hear. What's the stuff that's exciting you? And I'm talking about specific applications or uses of machine learning or AI that you're looking at and going, oh man, I can't wait. That's going to be more mature in 3-6 months and it's going to be showtime ready. Mm-hmm. What's that sort of stuff that's exciting you at the moment?
Microsoft Copilot is exciting. We, of course, are going to sell that to our customers, but we're leveraging that internally. So it's getting to start playing around with some of the features. You're able to say, hey, I need to have, maybe we're going to attend a talk show or a trade show in a couple of months. My topic is going to be cybersecurity around AI. I can actually ask the AI to write me a presentation about cybersecurity AI. I can have it format it in bullet points. I can chuck that into Microsoft PowerPoint. It'll turn it into a PowerPoint for it. And then I can reference an internal document at PAX 8, with our branding and our flavors and our color schemes and, you know, all the text and everything to match our brand. And it'll go out and just kind of, you know, put a fresh coat of paint over it. So that efficiency gain that's going to happen is astounding, because I'll ultimately be the one that will go through and review it. And yes, we will see instances in the real world where, somebody publishes a PhD paper that clearly has just been written by AI without even a proofread. But for it to maybe do some of that work that would take me 3 or 4 hours going through a lot of clicking. I don't like formatting at all. Everybody's tried to format a Word document. That's where the AI can help out with it, so that I can focus just on the content itself and really get it set up. And one maybe quote I'd like to leave you with, and it it's very interesting. It was by Rob Ray, one of our chief officers back in the United States, came over and was giving a presentation about it. Very open with the company. I love how open our leadership is. Somebody asked him, hey, do we need to worry about our jobs with AI? Like, are we potentially facing, you know, an extinction event in certain sectors because of AI? And very confidently, he said, no, the AI is not going to take your job. However, somebody that knows how to work with AI might compete for your job. And I think he hit the nail on the head with that statement, absolutely.
So. Yeah, Rob, such a smart guy. Yep. And again, you know, people often ask me, if we look at the amount of TUB Talks that we've done over the time, there are like quite a few with PAX 8 staff like yourself. Daisy Piker, you mentioned, was one of the most remarkable interviews that I've ever done. Rob and others. And people say, well, you speak to a lot of PAX 8 people. I'll share it openly now. The reason I speak to a lot of PAX 8 people is there are a lot of remarkable people within PAX 8. So that's the reason to do it. Not out of any unconscious bias or anything. It's just like we like shining a light on really smart, successful people on this show. And Tom, you are up there, my friend. Before we go, I've got to let you know, this, and I know it makes you blush, but you've got a fan club. I've had people, so you very kindly came on to our travel log a couple of weeks ago when we were in London at the cybersecurity show, and we had wonderful feedback, and I had emails from people just today from MSPs all over the world saying, loved hearing Tom talk. So this is just a snippet. I'd love to get you back on the show at some point in the future, perhaps when, you know, people can hear the background noise here and that. We're in the middle of a show and Tom has really kindly taken time out of his day to sit with me and record this bonusode. I'd love to get you back on the show and we can talk at length about what's going on in the world, because people want to hear more of Tom Welton.
Well, I suppose if people do want to hear it, then I'm happy to have that conversation. The learning's going to go both ways, so I might teach you something, but I want to learn something from you as well. So yeah, very, very happy to have those chats, and thank you for the kind feedback. That's very nice of you to say.
So for people who perhaps listening to this and have heard you for the first time and want to reach out to you, continue the conversation, or perhaps they're not PAX 8 MSPs and they're like, wow, if this guy works for PAX 8, I want to find out more. Yeah. How can they get in touch with you first of all, Tom?
Absolutely. So LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. So Tom Welton, W-E-L-T-O-N. I'll spell it out with my American accent there just in case. But, yeah, LinkedIn's a great one. Or yeah, you can reach out to me on, you know, my Pax8 email address as well is just twelton@pax8.com. So yeah, if you're interested in maybe any of the topics that I've discussed today, or maybe just ask my opinion on certain things, or yeah, ultimately want to get involved at Pax8, either send me an email or just hop over to pax8.com. We do have a very, you know, awesome website that's up to date. You know, there's no kind of commitment or fee or anything like that with the Pax8 partnership. We truly stand on the value add. And if we're not getting it done, then, you know, we are unfortunately, you know, sad to see you leave. But if, you know, one of our competitors is doing something better than us, then we take that as an opportunity to do better. We didn't expand internationally so we could be good. We expanded internationally so we could be great. If not the greatest. We are hungry and we're moving forward. We're going to continue to expand. And again, Bristol is now my home. So yeah, it's a good base of operations here in the greater EMEA. And I couldn't be more excited for the next couple of years. So technology and AI very much included in that.
Tom, you are a remarkable human being. Thank you, my friend. It's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit more. And I think the speech for the audience when we say we want to hear more from Tom Welton. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, hope to talk to you soon then.
Cheers.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tubblog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback.
Hey team, this is Richard again. Just one more thing before you take off, and that is MSP Insights. Now, every Tuesday, I share my thoughts on the business of IT with you, the managed service community. Thousands of managed service providers already subscribe to MSP Insights. It's easy to sign up, easy to cancel. MSP Insights is basically a short email from me every Tuesday without fail with advice on growing your IT business, plus cool resources I found, discovered, or started exploring that week. It's kind of like my diary of cool things, and often includes articles or books I've read, tools I've discovered, and events I think you'd be interested in, often sent to me by my friends and Tub Talk podcast guests. So if that sounds fun, a short tiny bite of MSP goodness every Tuesday, and you'd like to try it out, just go to go.tub.co/Tuesday. That's go.tub.co/Tuesday. Drop in your email and you'll get the very next one. Thanks for listening.